This is Inside Open Wheel with your host, Jeremy Scott.
From Tracom Multimedia Studios just outside of Chicago, this is Inside Open Wheel. Hey, everybody, Jeremy Scott with you. As we're recording this, this is in the middle of the testing at IMS, so we're not going to have the full results, but we're still going to talk a little bit about testing. Charlie joins me on this program. I sat down with Parker Thompson and Rob Howden. Rob, as we know, he's our usual Road to Indy insider, but we're going to welcome Parker to the Inside Open Wheel family. He is the new host of the Road to Indy TV, and I'm excited. Parker, a hell of a personality. I wish we had him in Indy Lights, but I can't think of anybody better to be on that the host of Road to Indy. And then Charlie and I preview this weekend's race for the Coca-Cola Bottling Company of Kokomo Indy Elite Series. It's the one, the only Indianapolis 500 presented by Catalyst 317. So as always, you can catch us on Twitter or Facebook at Inside Open Wheel. Email us, InsideOpenWheel@gmail.com, or you can leave us a voicemail on your Google Voice, 815-714-9260. I sent you this, Charlie, the other day, but I finally got some actual branded material, so when I go to the track, I can actually kind of self-promote my stuff. I think after off-the-cuff discussion with Rob, I'm going to probably look for sponsorship as well to have some T-shirts made when I'm at the track for fans just to, like, here, you know, listen to this, you know, so that way we get more promotion and also, you know, sponsor so I can get to the track. But I didn't tell you this, Charlie. So I had a hat made as well because, you know, there are days where it's too windy and I don't even want to do my hair at the track. Mm-hmm. I thought at first that I would, you know, I thought, you know, hey, it'd be cool to have the race car logo on the left front panel. The company I dealt with, which is Queensboro, put it on the far left panel. Well, and two, I didn't like the crown on the hat. So I shot him an email with the picture I sent you, and I said, hey, I thought I had a left front, I wanted left front panel, it's left panel, plus I'd like a different style, so I send the style number. Within an hour, I kid you not, and this is not a self-paid promotion, they didn't pay me to say this, within an hour, they sent me an invoice, they sent me an email saying, hey, we're sorry, you don't like it, we'll send you a new one in 2 weeks.
Nice.
Done. I didn't have to pay a thing, so if you're looking for branded material, Queensboro's the way to go. And I think when we end up having a clothing line ourselves, that's where we're going to go down. So I'm excited about it. And so hopefully once we get to more tracks, Charlie, you'll obviously get some with some things that we're working on that you know of. All right, a couple of big news out there. The biggest one I like, and I sent this to you with the words, damn it, these new liveries are going to cost me too much. On the 50th anniversary of A.J. Foyt's first win, A.J. Foyt Racing will run the one car, the one number one's being loaned out by Chip Ganassi Racing because Scott Dixon's a champion. We know he doesn't like to run the one. But J.R. Hildebrand will be behind the wheel of the ABC Supply Company Special. We'll have the number one. It'll look like the car, the livery that won the A.J.'s first Indianapolis 500.
That's cool. Actually, I didn't associate the livery with that car.
Yes.
Because it's a little bit different just because the shape of the car is so vastly different.
Yes.
From a front engine roadster. But yeah, that's pretty cool.
So this the story we're pulling this from is our friend Nathan Brown over at the Indianapolis Star, and I'm going to mute this so I don't get talked over. It was the Bose Sealfast Offenhauser that AJ Foyt took to his first win in 1961. I wanted to say that, but I didn't want to go off the cuff like that. It was the first of four victories for the Texan. It's great to see that A.J. Foyt was still able to get such a great driver like J.R. Hildebrand. I'm excited about it. And, of course, it was tough to get that number one from Chip Ganassi, but this is going to be a great addition to the field this year. So, A.J. Foyt, I think that's going to be four cars. Let me look here. And obviously, it's a fourth car. So he'll be teammates with Sebastian Bourdais, Dalton Kellett, and Charlie Kimball, who he's on property this weekend, but he's not in the car. I know he's running on Peacock doing his thing, but this is great for it's great for the 500. It's great for AJ Foyt Racing, and it's great for J.R. Hildebrand because we've seen how quick he's been at Indy.
Yeah, you know, any car for Indy is good. Be even better if they could run the whole season, but I guess figures can't be choosers.
I would love to see J.R. Hildebrand behind the wheel of a full season ride. So right now we do have 32 official team driver engine combinations. Top Gun Racing, that's including Top Gun Racing's planned entry with R.C. Enerson, another driver who should have a full-time ride. Cody, I think he's still doing he still needs to complete the fourth phase of rookie orientation, rumor has it he's going to be in the 500. Sage Karam is yet to announce a deal, but that'll be with Dryan Reinbold. So that may push it to close to 35 entries. So we may see bumping this year. Yay!
All right. Yay!
Oh, also Michael Andretti's looking towards a sixth entry, so that may bring the field to 36. Stefan Wilson, if you're listening, I hope that means that you're going to be in a seat. By the way, the last time the one car won the Indianapolis 500, 1971, with Al Unser. Charlie, I'm going to ask you this. I'm sure you probably don't know it, but what car number has won the most 500s?
I have absolutely no idea.
3 with 11. The last one was Elio Castroneves back in 2009. Now, speaking of testing, pretty big shunt during yesterday's session with 2020 Rookie of the Year Rinus VK. Did you get a chance to see that crash, Charlie?
I did, yeah.
Okay, so let's talk a little bit about it. So Rinus was on his fourth lap, coming around turn one, lost the car. And what I found was interesting was seeing that front wing dig on that infield grass. It caught a little bit of air. He made heavy contact with the wall. The worst he had was a broken finger, but the Ed Carpenter Racing team took the car back to the shop across the street. They determined last night that he was not going to be testing. Charlie, I want to get your thoughts on this crash because it was strange. It almost seems like he lost it right at the end of the middle of the apex.
Well, the video that I saw cut angles right before he lost control. So, But from the first initial part, it looked like he was heading, like he almost put a little bit too much wheel into it and the left front got on the grass. That's what it looked like to me. Or it hit the curb and maybe the car didn't like the curb. So my initial impression is that that's what happened. He either got onto the grass or got onto the curb and just lost it.
Because I saw it on Twitter. First of all, people say on Twitter, oh, he lost it coming in. But everything looked normal from entry to the apex. And then, yeah, it seems like the second that car, the left front, you know, went over that white line down onto the curbing, that's where it seemed like it just got unstable because it just snapped.
You know? Yeah, because I mean, I'm obviously not the expert at Indy, but it seems to me like you want to get like down below the white line, but you don't really want to get on the curb and you certainly don't want to get on the grass.
No, grass. I mean, grass is not fast. We know that, but it was
generally correct.
Yeah. It was an interesting situation. It's sad because, you know, I want to see Rinus do well because you don't want to see ill will against, you know, any drivers. I know you might think separate.
There may be a few exceptions.
There may be a few exceptions, you know, so, I'm not going to have ill will. I know there's a story that I sent you that you were actually celebrating over, but if you want to bring that up, we can.
That's okay.
Nonetheless, it was, thankfully he's able to walk away. And I don't know if you saw the slow-mo, but the way that safer barrier moved, it almost looked like it made contact with the concrete itself because he hit so hard.
Yikes.
So, and there were rumors that the Ed Carpenter team was going to bring out the road course car, but Ed said, I don't want to destroy two cars. You have the chance to destroy two cars, especially being so close to Barber. So Rinus is just going to sit out until Saturday's practice at Barber Motorsports Park next week. Some other news that's coming out. And I don't know whether or not I want to give credence to this. But there's a certain personality in, how do I put this? Not the blogosphere. Okay. A certain quote-unquote personality within the racing realm. And Charlie, I full disclosure, Charlie has a connection to this personality, so he knows who I'm talking about. For some reason, he keeps saying, oh, there's going to be no fans at the 500. There's going to be no fans at the 500. And then when IMS came out and said, we're not going to have fans at this test, we're going to, it's going to be on Peacock. Okay, I'm fine with it because of the way, you know, things have been here in the Midwest, because, you know, Michigan's blowing up, so everybody around it's blowing up with this new variant. I'm okay if there's nobody at a test. That's fine. If we don't have fans at practice, I'm okay. But the Athletic Motorsports retweeted by one of my stations, 93 WIBC in Indianapolis, said Indiana Governor Eric Holcomb was asked about a decision on the Indy 500 attendance during Friday's IndyCar open test on Peacock. He deferred the question to Doug Bowles, who said it would likely be a few weeks before that decision is made. I'm hearing anywhere between 100,000 to 200,000 people in the stands, and that's all going to be dependent on Marion County, on IU Health, State of Indiana. But the rate that these vaccinations are going, there's going to be fans at the 500. Charlie, it's just a matter of how many are going to be there. And I've had this discussion with my wife. She's like, well, you want to go to the 500? And I looked at her, I go, I want to let somebody who may have a 30, 40, or 50-year streak go instead of me. I can go next year. You know, if I get the sponsorship and they let media in, I can go sit in the media area. That's fine. I'm not going to sit in the stands and let somebody who is going on a long streak not get in. I would feel like absolute dog crap if I did that.
Yeah, I mean, I think that, like we've been saying for over a year now, that everything is tentative. We don't, nobody can predict if, like, this is all very fluid. Even if people make announcements about schedules and stuff, like, it's all subject to change. And so that is all still very much in effect, even though things are looking more positive. And so, yeah, I think your assessment is correct. There's going to be fans. It's just a matter of how many. And you know, I mean, vaccines are opening up to everybody next week.
Yes.
So that will leave a month and a half almost between when it's available to everyone and when the 500 is. So that's pretty good lead time. So yeah, I mean, the person in question lives in a media ecosystem where you have to generate controversy and you have to get views. And if you don't, then you get left behind. And you know, sometimes people just get it wrong. That can happen to anybody. I've certainly said stupid things on this program before.
And I have too, but I've also come out and said, hey, I screwed up. You know, it happens. You know, I've owned what I said. And it's frustrating when you have somebody like myself who has, you know, the content, I have the experience, I have this, and, you know, I bust my, you know how much I bust my hump to make sure that, you know, we get the right information out, we do this. And then when somebody, you know, comes out constantly says, oh, there's going to be no fans at the 500, and they use stupid reasons, stupid, like, for example, the stupid reason yesterday. A friend shared me a screenshot. So, you know how IndyCar has that, they've got that fifth wheel merchandise, the trailer that goes to every race event.
Mm-hmm.
Well, they staged it in front of, right on 16th Street across from IMS. His reasoning they weren't going to have fans at the 500 was because, oh, nobody's running that, so they're not going to have fans at the 500. But yet they had to stage it so they can get ready for taking it down to Alabama this week. And Doug Bowles tweeted him as such.
Yeah, I don't know.
We'll just leave it at that. But there will be fans. We're going to do our best to work on getting somebody from, you know, either 93 WIBC in Indianapolis to kind of give us a lowdown. Or we'll get somebody from, you know, IMS, because this is going to be a fluid situation. You heard last week on Inside Open Wheel that Tony Perella still wasn't sure whether or not the FR America's cars were going over the border to run at Three Rivers, and he even said, look, if we don't run Three Rivers, we're going to put the FR cars on the docket for Mid-Ohio. So he knows it's a fluid situation. He understands it, and it's just going to be a fluid situation, you know, for the rest of the season. But I've been talking to some people within the IndyCar paddock, and you know, we talked last week about the Pfizer vaccine being available to all teams starting at Barber. There's no doubt in my mind that if, you know, we don't have things open up by May in Indianapolis, that we're going to be close to normal when the series hits Road America in June.
I think that's a fair assessment. Yeah.
Yeah.
I think at that point, the biggest question is, are we going to be able to go to Canada? Like you mentioned.
I don't think so. Here's why I don't think we're going to Canada this year. And you know, it is what it is. I think it sucks, but we have to listen to what Prime Minister Trudeau and the rest of the Canadian officials say. As of this recording, the mayor of Toronto has basically put a hold on all sporting events in the city limits until July 1st. Now, we know it's going to take at least a month to set up everything around Exhibition Place. There would have to be a special dispensation to allow setup of the racetrack. I don't see that happening. I really don't. And it's a bummer because I love going to Canada. I love our Canadian friends. But I understand why they're not allowing people in the United States to freely move across the borders like they did 2 years ago. There's no doubt in my mind that we'll have a race in Toronto next year. And I will tell you this. I will be sure to make that the biggest party Toronto has ever seen. And that's saying a lot because we've seen some pretty darn good races in the kart era.
Yeah. I agree with that. I think that it'll definitely be back next year. I think that I'd say there's a slim possibility that we could see Canada. I mean, I know I read yesterday that that Germany has increased their vaccination rate by 100% over last week. So things can change pretty quickly.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
I don't know. I don't like making predictions about anything, so we'll just have to wait and see.
I don't either, but I just had the strange feeling that Canada's not going to happen. I have been told that there will be no, a couple sources have told me that there will be no doubleheaders this year. There will be a new track added, and that includes for the road to Indy. You know, whether that's another stop at Mid-Ohio for road to Indy, whether, you know, we see a return of a road course we haven't seen here in the States on the IndyCar docket. You know, that remains to be seen. Do we go back to Watkins Glen? Oh, no, that would be horrible to go to New York. No, I don't want to go to Watkins Glen. Team run the boot, by the way.
Oh, why wouldn't they run the boot?
Oh, exactly. Well, here's the thing. Real quick, off topic. So IMSA's got another race at Watkins Glen to replace, you know, Mosport. They should run the sprint course for that race.
The NASCAR course?
Oh, yeah. I'll tell you what, some of the best sports car races I've seen were Grand Am races on the NASCAR course. Just a thought. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, I sit down with Rob Howden and Parker Thompson as we go over the Road to Indy preview next.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, it's busy as everybody's going to be here in the next couple of days, we figure we get the Road to Indy preview out of the way first. And there's three series, but there are two insiders we're going to have at some point this year. As always, we have the great Road to Indy insider, Rob Howden. Rob, it's been, I have to say, Happy New Year. I don't think we've talked at all this year.
I don't think we have, Jeremy. Always great to be on your show. You're doing fantastic work, and we appreciate all the support that you're giving to the Road to Indy.
And joining us this year, he is a driver in the IMSA Porsche North America Carrera Cup, formerly known as the GT3 Challenge. Now he is, for some reason, joining Rob Howden. I question when I join Rob, but nonetheless, we welcome in Parker Thompson. He's stepping out of the open wheel cockpit and joining us in the analyst role. So, Parker, thanks for joining us. Welcome.
Jeremy, thank you very much for having me.
All right, let's talk about, let's talk to you, Parker. What made you join the circus that is us in the media?
Well, that's a great question. I love it. You know, I've had the pleasure of working with some amazing people that have boosted my career and got me to where I am behind the wheel. And with the Road to Indy, I would have loved to have been driving a car this year, but unfortunately, I couldn't close the gap for an Indy Lights budget, and a fourth year in Indy Pro with already a second and a third finish in the championship just didn't really make much career sense. So it was funny when I kind of made it slightly public to a few people that I might not be racing back on the road to Indy. There was an outpour of support to try and get me as a Road to Indy TV host. So it was cool. I'm super proud to fill that hole and take the role. And Rob, thank you very much for the new Road to Indy series director. He probably had a pretty big part of that behind the scenes too. So it was awesome to get that phone call and become the new Road to Indy TV host.
Well, and Rob, you previewed that to me about a couple weeks ago, and I'm like, oh, I'll see who it is, because I was picking my brain thinking, who the heck is it going to be? Is he bringing somebody up from karting? But huge choice. You know, when I heard the news that Parker was going to be the analyst, I think I shot you a message and been like, all right, well, we're going to keep rotate you and him on the show.
Well, the interesting, the interesting thing for me was, guys, is that, you know, we saw what James Hinchcliffe was able to do in his efforts, you know, last year for NBC on Pit Lane. And when it came to the point where, hey, you know what, we need a new Road to Indy TV host, I was like, hold on. I don't know that Parker, I know Parker's working on an Indy Lights ride. I knew that he was wasn't quite there. I'm like, yeah, you know what? It would keep Parker in the paddock with us. Mm-hmm. And because he's had so much time on the road to Indy, because he's just a talented race car driver, and because he's so great out of the race car in terms of being able to speak and just work with people, I'm like, this is a natural fit, right kind of in the same lines as James taking some time away before he went back to the seat. So if all goes well, we'll have Parker back in Indy Lights next year, or in Indy Lights next year. He'll have had his time with Road to Indy. We can continue to watch him work his way to the NTT IndyCar series. But I'll tell you this, Jeremy, I literally walked into one of the very first kind of interviews that Parker was doing at Barber for spring training. And I was blown away. Just a simple, it's like he'd been doing it for years, just such an easy transition. And it was, it made me very happy how things are going to go for 2021.
Well, and Parker, this is a natural for you because you do public speaking as well.
Yes. First, I'll say, I swear I'm not paying Rob to say that. So, Rob, thank you for the... All
right. Rob doesn't pay much of us anything, so I get it. I understand.
Yeah. And then secondly, yes, you know, I've been speaking to high school students since I was a high school student when I was 16 years old with Drive to Stay Alive. I've spoken to over 100,000 high school students. So that is more of a public message. It's more... don't text and drive, but this is a lot of the same thing. It's, you've got to connect with your audience. And even though your audience is only one person and you're trying to get them to be comfortable and talk a little bit more, you've got to have that connection. So it was cool. A big learning curve. It's funny. I got home from Barber. I was burnt out.
Oh yeah.
So massive respect to everybody in the media. It's
welcome to the media world, Parker. It's a lot of work.
I can't tell you how many times I've worked 10, 12 hour days and I would come home and just pass out.
Yeah, yeah, and that's exactly what happened to me. So it's not, it's funny because when I'm on the other side of the camera per se, and I'm the one getting the questions asked to, it's fairly business as usual. Mm-hmm. This is a little different, right? Now when I'm doing it, there's so many different segments being a Road to Indy TV host that some of it's the same, but some of it's a lot different. You know, when you're asking the drivers questions, you're not the star of the show, you're making them the star of the show. And you've got to portray that in the light. It's a little different. So it was very hands-on for me to learn as much as I could, as quick as I could, to make sure that we hit the ground running. But the whole Road to Indy TV crew was an amazing. They were amazing at giving me a great opportunity for a transition. They were knowledgeable. They gave me everything I needed to do. And I'm sure I'm going to be learning as we go and develop this.
Now, before we get talking about the Road to Indy preview, let's talk about your experience so far in sports cars, racing sports cars, because we see a lot of drivers making the transition from the ladder system into sports cars before they jump into, you know, like an Indy Lights or an IndyCar deal.
Yeah, so it was an interesting deal that got put together this year. First off, it would have never happened without Porsche Canada and without JDX Racing. So Porsche Canada came to the table and they really wanted to promote an all-Canadian team. So for those of you who don't know, JDX, the owner, Jeremy Dale, which is the JD in JDX, is actually from Toronto. He was a professional race car driver himself, and then he was crazy enough to decide to start a race team. Right. So there's a really cool story here, because Jeremy was actually the first team owner that gave me a shot at Barber Motorsports Park 2 years ago in 2019. he called me up out of the blue. He essentially lost his driver weeks before the first race in what was called Porsche Cup Challenge USA back in 2019. And he said, have you ever driven a sports car? To which I was just coming off of double wins at St. Pete, never driven anything with a roof over my head that wasn't on the street. And he said, well, learn quick. So went right in, got two podiums there. The next two races were at Mid-Ohio in the wet, got my first win in a sports car. Unfortunately, the schedules conflicted as I stayed with the Indy Pro Championship and we couldn't make a full season run, but I owe my first sports car win to him. So this is pretty cool to come back together with Porsche Canada, with JDX Racing, and then some other really good partners, mainly from Ohio, funny enough. So we've got Byers Auto Group and Byers Porsche supporting us. We've got Sergeir, and then we've got Rainier Construction, all three companies out of Ohio. So we've got the Midwest connection coming through to help the number 9 JDX car compete this year.
Fantastic. Now, how are you going to work that with your Road to Indy schedule?
Right now, as I knock on wood, fingers crossed, there's really no conflicts. But with the pandemic and things still changing, I don't know what's exactly going to happen, but the Road to Indy TV crew guys have been very creative on how we can do things. Maybe if I can't make a race, it's nice. A lot of the schedules don't really conflict because even if they do are on the same weekend, Porsche Carrera Cup usually races in IMSA quite early in the weekend. We usually don't see the weekend. We usually race Wednesday, Thursday, Friday. And usually with the Road to Indy, it's more Saturday, Sunday. So we'll be flexible and make it work. But right now, there's no conflicts. So knock on wood.
Why do I have a feeling that if you can't make a race somehow, I'm going to get reeled into doing your job? Well,
I have a very similar feeling. So
I'm not doing IndyCar radio on the IndyCar side this year, just Indy Lights, because I wanted to focus on the Road to Indy series development director position I have. So I have a feeling if there is ever a conflict, they'll pull me back in. But I'm definitely no Parker Thompson.
And I've got to ask, Rob, how's that been going so far? Now that we're into the first weekend of testing, we're getting ready for the first weekend at Barber. How's that role been for you so far?
I probably shouldn't say this, but because I don't want them to know this, but I love the job so much. It's to be able to immerse yourself right into it, right? I know what I did before. I was talking to team owners all the time, but now I'm really doing with a lot deeper purpose. You know, my focus is on developing the series and trying to make minor adjustments, you know, just trying to make it better and better for the teams. Obviously, connect to bring new drivers in from other programs. But Barb, if Barber's any indication, I'll be smiling all year long. It was just awesome. I really, it's awesome. I'm loving it. It just the way the series kicked off at spring training, everybody's loving what's going on. It's such a professional program. Everybody in every position is a pro, and everything is done. You know, the thing I love about working with Danny Anderson is that, you know, we have a meeting normally at the start of every season, and he talks about Roger Penske and how Roger does everything with a focus on excellence. Everything needs to be perfect. Everything needs to be done perfectly. And I like that. That's the way I live my life. So I'm more than happy to be part of that focus.
Fantastic. All right, we're going to take a quick break. Coming up next, we're going to go into USF 2000, talk about the sessions, and see what we think's going to happen throughout the season.
To protect his home and family from disaster, Steve used courage, wisdom, and his camera phone.
That should do it.
Way to go, Steve! By simply taking digital pictures of his family's important documents, Steve can always have them stored safely online, no matter when disaster strikes. Learn other simple ways to protect your home and family before a natural disaster at ready.gov. That's ready.gov. A message from FEMA and the Ad Council.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
It's a Road to Indy preview here on Inside Open Wheel. Rob Houghton, Parker Thompson joining us. And I've got to say, USF 2000, I'm not too surprised by the drivers at the top, but, and I'm going to throw this question to both of you, either one of you answer first. Who's surprised to see Nolan Siegel being no slower than fifth during these sessions?
I'm not surprised at all. Third year in the series, you know, he's with a good team. We saw what they were able to do at the end of last year, right? We knew kind of they were going to step things up over at D-Force, and he's got some good guys around him as well. I'm not surprised. You know, he's shown good speed last year, but not like race winning or podium speed. But yeah, it's in his third year. He's a different kid. Parker can speak to this. But I tell any kid that comes into USF 2000, who you are at the start of the season and who you are at the end of the season is so radically different. Mm-hmm. They come in full, and I'll say, I always say this, you know, filled with piss and vinegar. They think they're going to come in and kick everybody's ass because they won karting championships, but it's such a different program. And to see Noel now in his third year coming out of the gate strong, I expect him to be potentially running for the championship this year.
It's going to be interesting to see who runs that championship. One thing that I noticed too, which really is no surprise either, we saw how stout the Turn 3 Motorsport drivers were. Also, Parker, one thing that was interesting is seeing Eric Evans make, and Miles Rowe really, make their way up the time charts throughout the two-day sessions.
Yeah, it was a bit of a toss-up. You know, you've got Christian Brooks and you've got Josh Green, who both drivers are coming back. Both drivers have obviously Christian staying with Exclusive Autosport. He knows exactly where he's at with that team. He spent a whole season with them. Josh, I know Peter Dempsey quite well, and he's done a very good job of getting Josh acclimated to Turn 3 Motorsport. So I think that transition has been pretty seamless. But then you look at these guys that, yeah, you're right. A couple surprises in the midfield there that they had good tests, but that's really no surprise. You know, there's a reason why Miles Rowe got chosen for his opportunity. I think he is a talent. Yeah. You know, mm-hmm. I didn't get to watch the USF 2000 as much as I would like, but in the sessions that I did, when that 99 went by, you could tell that somebody special was behind the wheel. So I think you're going to see them develop. Obviously, being a rookie, it's tough, but I think as the season comes, he'll gain experience and he'll be quick.
Here's, let's throw a little thing in here. It's kind of interesting for Turn 3 Motorsports. They had a little, I would call a little extra horsepower in the tent because Brian Hallahan, who owns Newman Walks mm-hmm. Racing, is actually the team manager for that team this year. Those are actually the Newman Walks cars.
Oh.
So those are his cars. So okay. He sold those cars because he's doing the Formula Regional Americas yep. program with Jordan Missig and Ian Rodriguez. And so Brian's been around for a long, long time. If there's anybody, if I could start a team, that's the guy I would hire to try to run my mm-hmm. team because he did the Atlantic Championship. Everything that Brian does is 100% first class. That's the way he approaches everything. So he'll be able to bring a lot of stability, I think, to that team, which I think is big for them. And in talking to both Josh Green and Dylan Christie, they are both super comfortable in terms of from the very get-go, from the first test, everything they've done together, they are so comfortable and so feeling so good. And Parker, you know that when you feel comfortable and you feel you trust the people around you, you're going to be fast.
Well, and then not only that, to add this super team in USF 2000 together, complete with Brian, I had spoke with Peter, and what's kind of interesting, what I found interesting, is Ernie Ganella has yeah. actually now come down to USF 2000, and the explanation I got on that was that Ernie, the only Road to Indy Championship he hasn't won is USF 2000. Now he's never attempted it. But to give some extra motivation to Ernie this year at Turn 3 Motorsport, he's what? Actually, yes,
wow.
Ernie yeah. is competing in USF 2000. So that really struck me. I mean, Ernie's had a ton of success. I mean, if I'm being honest, Ernie's beat me to a couple championships in Indy Pro.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
I've seen this this little guy on pit boxes do magic to race cars, and I think and he's probably going to do the same.
And he's got a team in F4 with our fellow Canadian Matt Clark as well.
Yes.
Oh, yeah, Matt Quick.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh.
Hey, here's the one thing. Let's go from that, and I'll just throw this out there. I'm sure, Jeremy, you're going to bring it up. If there's anything that surprised me from the weekend, and I don't think I've ever said this in the 11 years I've been announcing this series, but Cape Motorsports struggled.
Yeah, that was a shock.
Yeah, yeah. They did. They were not where I expected them to be. Michael DiOrlando, for a lot of the time, was outside the top five, outside the top 10. That was surprising to me.
And Parker,
you're a Cape Motorsports driver.
Well, and not only am I a Cape Motorsports driver, I won here. I swept the weekend with Cape in 2016
yeah,
at Barber Motorsports Park. So it's not even like they don't know how to set a car up here.
Different race car, though.
It is, but I don't know. That was strange. And if I'm being honest, next to D-Force Racing, I would say Cape has one of the strongest total complete lineups. You know, I don't see any real chink in their armor. I thought they had a really stout group of young guys going for a championship. So to see them outside, like you said, the top five, top 10 was jaw dropping.
And it's even more interesting because look at how well DiOrlando did in F1600 the weekend before at Carolina with two wins. And he almost swept the weekend. So
that's actually his brother. Oh, it's his brother. Jeremy.
Okay.
That's his brother, Nicholas. So, yeah.
I knew I would screw something up.
There's not just one beer, Lando. We got another one coming up the pipe. Oh, that's Nicholas Deer, Lando. Yeah.
Well, and something funny, I just want to plug this because I think it was a really cool family thing. So the D'Orlandos, I train at Pit Fit here in Indianapolis.
Yep.
And the D'Orlandos did a boot camp for 2 weeks. So the father and both sons came. They rented an Airbnb. They hung out for 2 weeks, and they trained at Pit Fit. And now I call him Mr. D'Orlando. The father, Rob, you probably know exactly who I'm talking about.
He's Michael as well, yeah.
Oh, and that's what I thought. I just didn't want to get it wrong in the air. I tell you what. Michael Sr. can get it on the ski urge. He can get it on the battle ropes.
Seriously.
The guy is fit. That's yeah. Awesome. So pretty cool. He was coming in and competing with his kids in Pit Fit. Like that was it. Good
That's
to
awesome.
See.
That's awesome.
We're talking about the USF 2000. I'm still getting over the fact that I actually got something wrong. That's a shock for someone who has been doing this for a year.
Hey,
least.
Dude, nothing wrong with mistakes. You never make them again. That's what it's for.
Exactly. And you know what? That's what happens when you try and do something live. Inside Open Wheel talking about USF 2000, Parker Thompson and Rob Howden. Parker, what else surprised you throughout the USF 2000 tests?
Well, I think one thing that we can address, obviously, one of the new teams this year, and I'm not going to say it's a surprise, but you've got Joe Dueling Motorsport or Autosport, mm-hmm. Rob?
It is Joe Dueling Motorsports, I believe.
Perfect. So Joe Dueling Motorsports with Trey Burke. Obviously, Trey has a lot of background on the dirt going in a circle. Not a lot of background in a formula car. Really confident young kid. In my interviews with him, he called out all the formula car drivers and said, "You don't know how to drive race cars until you've driven on the dirt in a circle." Which is, hey, I appreciate the confidence. Yeah. But at the same time, I think it's going to be a bit of a steep learning curve. And that was showcased a little bit at Barber Motorsports Park. Maybe not a surprise. New team, new driver to formula cars. But at the same time, I think they're going to have their work cut out for them for the season.
It's actually Joe Dueling Autosports. So.
It is Autosport.
Yeah, it is Autosport.
All right, there
yeah.
you go. That about Jeremy. I got a mistake. Parker, you're up next for the mistakes.
Yeah, not worried about that.
I'll tell you what I spent a lot of time talking to Trey and his mom and dad. And here's a kid that hustles around 410 sprinters, right? Sprint cars. So this guy is a badass. Let's put it that way. And if we may need to have the conversation, Parker. We've talked about trying to get you to the Chili Bowl. Right.
Yes.
And I know that Trey runs the Chili Bowl. So we may have to do something here for you to be his teammate at the Chili Bowl. And here's the spin on that. I'm just going to say this. Obviously, you know, Jeff Sinden is running that team, and Jeff has never run a junior formula team before. Right. He's worked in the IndyCar program for many, many, many years. So really they're learning the race car too. You know, Trey's out there learning how to drive these tracks and drive with this program coming from sprint cars. Jeff's trying to figure out exactly what to do with the Tatis USF 17. I am told right now that they are they're getting a new coach for Trey to have at the weekends. Phil Lombardi is going to work with him, which I think is great. Phil's been a longtime Formula Car driver, former Continental driver, and a driver coach down at the Lucas Oil School of Racing. So full-time coach on the weekends. And I think they're going to set up with a couple, maybe some veteran mechanics, engineers in the road D&D to potentially try to give them just a little bit more guidance to try to get that platform, that baseline, better, you know, to where it more needs to be moving to Barber next week.
Awesome.
Yeah, I think it's great. But yeah, it's good. Hey, listen, Parker, it's going to be a great story all year long. This sprint car driver coming to the road to Indy. I love it.
And listen, just so I can clarify, I think it is exactly what the road to Indy needs.
Yeah.
Is to showcase light on going back and forth. And another thing I want to say is you take any driver on the road to Indy and stick him in his realm, and I think you'll
Not
see
a
lot. Of, exactly.
That's
so,
right. Yeah.
Maybe I could be the example of that.
Let's do it. Chili Bowl.
Well,
Parker Thompson.
I have to say, also take a look what happened at Lucas Oil Raceway last year.
Yeah, that was Cody Swanson's run in Indy Pro 2000 was for me one of the biggest stories from 2020 because we had seen a number of people come from the USAC Silver Crown, USAC Sprint Cars midgets come and try to run in the road to Indy, but they always want to run the Freedom 100. That's the race they want to run, right? So they'll come in, whether it's a Chris Windham or whoever else. We saw Chad Boat run a couple of races with Bilardi Auto Racing as well. And I love the fact that Cody decided to come in a level lower and go at it in the Indy Pro 2000. That gave him, I think, a better opportunity. He showed it with that victory at the Freedom 90. And for me, that's important. I love having guys come into the program, but you got to do it at the right place. Trey Burke's only 16 years of age. this is perfect for him. He's still going to run his 410 sprint car. He's going to do some pavement midget stuff, I think, this year as well, which is great. But him coming into USF 2000, that plays down the line. Literally, he could have 5, 6, 7 years before he gets to IndyCar. As long as the funding is there, this is a good, this is a great move for him.
Yeah, it's going to be interesting to see what happens. I see he's from my neck of the woods, too. So hopefully he'll be able to get some track time like some of the other Road to Indy teams have been getting in the past couple of years at my back door. All right, coming up next on Inside Open Wheel is the Indy Pro 2000 preview show. And we're not even going to name champions rookies of the year because we know everything is wide open when it comes to the Road to Indy.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Don't forget, you can catch us on any podcast service, including the new Odyssey app. Make sure that you update your radio.com app to make it Odyssey. Parker Thompson, Rob Howden joining us here on Inside Open Wheel. We're going over spring training, previewing the 2021 Road to Indy Championship. Next up is the Indy Pro 2000 Championship. And I've got to say this, the one thing that I'm kind of surprised at, Rob, yeah, I'm not, is that Turn 3, which had two cars last season, did real well with two cars, right now sitting with one, but they do have a stout driver in James Rowe.
Yeah, you know, listen, it's an interesting thing. There's a lot of teams in Indy Pro 2000, right? And, and you, oftentimes you see kind of ebbs and flows, a couple drivers go. You know, Antoine Comeau had been the driver who'd been with Turn 3 for a number of years. Mm-hmm. He's actually moved on. He may actually come back. I think there's a new team forming. We may see him actually at a couple races this year, but he's not with Peter Dempsey's program. Peter was able to get the two young drivers coming into USF 2000. And then again, that's the development for him right now. He's got both Dylan Christie and Josh Green. Potentially, if Josh wants to move or even Dylan wants to move, now he's got the, you know, he can move them up to his own team in Indy Pro 2000. Otherwise, James Rowe's a great young shoe, a strong Irish driver. Great to have him in the series. And he showed really well. And I think maybe it's a bit of a surprise to me, but I think he may be a championship contender. I wouldn't have said that before spring training, but he showed really well down at Barber.
Well, and he did quite well in FR Americas the past couple of years. And, you know, his talent really didn't show because it was a Linus Lundqvist show. We'll talk more about Linus here in the next segment, which I see Rob's kind of smiling there because.
Oh, yeah.
I'm a huge Linus Lundqvist fan. Just don't tell him that. Parker, also, it's interesting, too, to see the rookie field. I think that this year alone is probably the most stacked that we have seen rookies in Indy Pro 2000. He's got Enzo Fittipaldi, Kiffin Simpson, James Rowe, Cameron Shields, Hunter Yaney, and that's just naming a handful of them.
Yeah, it's pretty amazing that the Anderson Group and the Road to Indy has had such a success with stacking the fields up. You know, these are some of the highest car counts that I can recall on my years in the Road to Indy. And it's awesome to see a lot of new blood, too. It's not just, you know, internally moving drivers up. There's a lot of drivers coming over. You've got drivers from Europe. You've got a bunch of people coming together to make that grid what it is in the rookies.
Well, and one thing I like, too, you have champions there. You have last year's F4 champ, Hunter Yaney. You have Flynn Lazier, who's won the SCCA runoffs in Formula Atlantic. You have, you know, Reese Gold coming in, Christian Rasmussen, Jay Howard's got a couple of good drivers, Rob. And it's just amazing that this year alone, it's just stacked with talent in the rookie field.
Yeah, the big addition for me was Anam Ahmed, running for RP Motorsports, 2017 British F3 champion. When I was kind of connecting with him, somebody told me he was coming over to test. I contacted Anam. He's a former FIACIK World Champion karting guy as well. And I said, man, this is what a great get this would be for the series to add him in here as well. So you're right. I think that you look at the group of rookies we have right now, and we haven't even mentioned Kiffin Simpson. It's only going to be a partial Simpson for Kiffin. He swept the weekend at Road Atlanta in the Formula Regional Americas series, comes over here and was super fast with Hunkos Racing. This is good. This is going to be a really, really good rookie crop.
Well, it doesn't hurt that his driver coach is also somebody who did well in FR Americas. They raced with in the second half of the season. I just blanked.
Victor Franzoni.
Thank you. Yes, Victor Franzoni. Yeah. You know, so that's
he's all right.
Yeah, he's okay. I mean, he's won a championship in Indy Pro 2000, then Pro Mazda. So, but no, it's. Look at this. It's talent upon talent. Then you have returning drivers like Colin Kaminsky, Hunter McElroy, Suleiman, this is going to be a fantastic season, I think.
Yeah, I'm interested in seeing what happens here. You know, we didn't see Exclusive Autosport be as impressive as I thought they might have been, but I think potentially Braden Eves and Artem Petrov are doing a lot of race sims. One of the things about this the spring training program is we don't run the cars all through tech. We don't weigh everybody, you know, do the full weight, the scale says. You never know who's going to be light on fuel during the session, whatever it may be. So I always kind of step back a little bit in terms of seeing who's fast at the spring training event. But that said, Wyatt Prokocik for J Howard Driver Development, I think he topped three of the sessions. So, man, this is a guy that was, you know, in his first year of USF 2000, we found him all the time between like 8th and 15th kind of last year, kind of where he was. P1, Parker, what do you think about this kid? Like three sessions, he was the top guy out there. Pretty impressive.
Well, what's interesting is I asked everybody the same question, which is, who do you think is your main championship challenger? Or who do you view not yourself going into this year as the guy you're going to compete against? And he said, I'm going to win the championship.
Everybody said that.
No.
Oh.
Wyatt was one of the ones I remember off the top of my head saying that.
Wow.
And I was a little taken back because as a longtime driver on the road to Indy, I'm going, okay, you know, I don't know exactly where you finished last year in USF 2000, but if I don't know exactly where you finished last year in USF 2000,
that's an indication.
That's an indication that maybe we got to set realistic expectations. But yep, kudos to him. He proved me wrong. You know, they had a late engineer change over there at J. Howard Driver Development with bringing in Bryn Mittal, who I've competed against.
Yep.
He ran Malukas in the height of their, what was Pro Mazda, now Indy Pro 2000, back in 2018. And they won some races. I remember at Barber next to the track record holder and the guy who won the race, they were right there. David was actually pretty quick at Barber with a car put together by Bryn.
Yeah,
so
you're right. That's a really good point. So I'll write that down for my announcing, but you were bang on. They were good there.
They were good there. So there's Barber's an interesting place. I find that you have certain drivers that do really well there for whatever reason. I haven't sat in a car at Barber Motorsports Park and not been on the podium in sports cars and everything. It's one of those places where every weekend I seem to find myself at the front, no matter how far off we started.
Yep.
But it's also, I think it's a feeling in the car. I talk to a lot of different drivers. You either struggle with terminal understeer or you struggle with the car being uncomfortably loose. And to find that knife edge balance is really difficult, especially with Indy Pro. It's got more aero. It's got more horsepower. So I think the field is struggling with it. And you look at some cars, they're just on rails. And J. Howard Driver Development and Wyatt being one of them.
And this is the first. Also, we're talking about Braden Eves. This is also the first official session that he was in a car since his crash at IMS.
Yeah.
And Rob, really, second place on the final session, it seemed like, you know, yeah, they may have been working on race setup, but for Braden, it's kind of odd to see him wait till the last session to post a fast time.
Well, here's the one thing was we only had four sets of tires for the four sessions over the weekend. And no, five, right? Five sessions. Four sets of tires and no carryover. So literally the first time they rolled out on that first test on Sunday, they had fresh tires on. And I think that one more set of tires may have made a little bit of a difference that way, because you saw people using fresh tires in different sessions, right? So Braden saved a set for the end. I can't remember who topped that last session off the top of my head right now. Might have been Prokocik again, but people saving tires, right, for the session. Same thing with Indy Lights. There were drivers that saved tires for the last, near the end of the run on their test on Tuesday. So for me, with Braden and Artem, both drivers are race winners from last year. You know, Braden, of course, won the championship at USF 2000 2 years ago. I'm not worried about them at all. They've got their same engineering crew. In fact, they've actually added John Hayes, who is a very noted and highly esteemed engineer. So I think they're going to be strong. It's just, again, like Parker said, maybe they weren't right on the razor's edge, but with that final tire run, he looked pretty good at the end of the day on Monday.
Well, and just two things to note. I was impressed that Manuel Suleiman obviously had an accident early on day two, still topped the time. They didn't take his time away, even though he did put it in the wall, but he came back from that. He was the guy who topped the last session. So
hey,
that's
let's ask Parker this right now. Good.
Okay.
This is a really good one, because Parker, he was your teammate last year at D-Force Racing. And I don't want you to throw him under the bus, but tell me why you think he could win the championship this year. Because obviously he scored a race win last year. He got the win when you weren't able to with the blown motor, but he looked really good through the end of the season. Do you think he's a championship contender?
I 100% think he's a championship contender. You know, I think a lot of things go into a championship. I was actually slightly surprised when I saw Reese Gold and Kiffin Simpson getting the better of him earlier in the test. And then a lot of people don't know this, but there was 2 weeks ago, there was an open test with the, I believe, the Academy. So I got to watch the Indy Pro cars there as well. And Manuel was not the quickest Juncos car, which I found interesting. So he's taken some time to adapt to the car. It's I had a conversation with him. He said it's a different car than he's ever driven.
Really?
Which tells me that it was a lot different. And that makes a lot of sense.
I love hearing that. That's great insight, Parker, that even though it's a spec chassis, right? Everything's a spec series, that the cars are totally different between two teams. I find that intriguing.
Well, and Rob, it makes sense. It's funny. Ricky and his team are probably at Juncos the only team that I have not sat behind the wheel of. So that is the only car that I really don't know what it feels like. And it just happened to be the car that's beat me a heck of a lot more than other colored cars.
That wasn't going to bring that up.
Well, that's fine. I'm a host now. So
that's right. You'll be an Indy Lights driver next year.
Exactly.
All right.
All right. Speaking of Indy Lights, we're going to talk about Indy Lights here next. And I'm excited because they're back.
No word in the English language is less convincing than probably.
Are you sure we should get matching tattoos on our first date?
Sure. We'll probably stay together.
Probably? It's been 23 minutes since I ate. I can probably swim.
You should wait 30 minutes.
Okay, now tell me what to do. Cannonball! Cramp! Oh, I have a cramp. I can probably hit the green from here.
Probably.
Can I get a mulligan?
Ready to go?
Hey, are you sure you're okay to drive?
Yeah, I'm pretty sober. Yeah, I'm probably okay.
Probably okay isn't okay, especially when it comes to drinking and driving. If you're drinking, call a cab, a car, or a friend. Buzzed driving is drunk driving. A message brought to you by NHTSA and the Ad Council.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Oh, this segment gives me big smiles because Indy Lights is back. Now, nothing against FR Americas or any of the other series that ran last year. Indy Lights is a series that's near dear to my heart because it reminds me a lot of the Atlantic Championship, the Champ Car Atlantic Championship. Rob Howden, Parker Thompson joins us right now. And I've got to say, I'm not surprised by, you know, seeing the top of the time charts for all the sessions at Barber Motorsports Park.
I don't want to say that I am as well, but I will say this. Linus Lundqvist, of course, we know won the FRA program last year to get a scholarship to come to run Indy Lights. To me, he was the unknown because he ran that car with a bunch of guys that had never driven that. You know, it's an interesting program. So he comes in here. We've got veteran drivers here that have run before. You got the McGinnis, you've got Malukas, you've got Kyle Kirkwood coming in. You know, he did some testing, a lot of testing. Toby Sowery with the time he's had in the program as well. So for him to be as good as he was, that kind of cleared up the unknown for me.
Yeah.
Right. Because, yeah, you know what? Everybody said, hey, this kid Linus is the real deal. Well, we found that out at Barber for spring training. He's the real deal. HMD, the HMD Global program being up top where they were, that surprised me a little bit because they kind of shut out the top times for a while there. But they have really put the time, and I'll say this, they have been testing aggressively. And, and they actually went out to Laguna Seca as well. So when we eventually get there for that race, I think they're going to have a heads up on a couple of the teams too.
And I think I told you too, I think that's one thing I said when Linus won his championship. Watch out for him because... Yep. Watch one thing that I learned about Linus is he takes a Scott Dixon like approach to his practice and qualifying and learning new tracks. And I think this is where he's going to shine this year. And Parker, what are your thoughts on this?
Well, I think that the only thing you guys haven't mentioned, and I think it deserves a lot of credit, is David Malukas.
Yeah.
We're getting there.
Yeah. I mean, listen, we can. Great. He went and won a bunch of a bunch of races in the FR Championship. I'm not taking anything of that away from him. He ran away with the championship, no mm-hmm. pun intended. But at the same time, I feel like some of the other drivers in that series maybe didn't get as fair of a shot. You know, that car was on rails that he was on at Global. Global had a lot of experience with it. You know, David Malukas and his engineer bought cars 2 weeks before the season started 100%. And showed up and went racing and actually competed with them for the most part. So, you know, I think David, people maybe don't give him enough credit because he went to Indy Lights pretty early, right? Mm-hmm. He could have easily stayed and gave me a hard time in Indy Pro if he would have stayed there in 2019, I believe.
Yep.
When he made his debut in Indy Lights, but he went up early and it was a tough season. It was a tough adapting to a way heavier car with a lot more horsepower. But I think he is primed and ready. I think he's as confident as I've ever seen him. He's got this, you can just tell. I've been around the road to Indy enough when I'm competing against guys where you can tell a certain aura that they bring. And David's got it this year. It's going to be a strong start to the year for him.
You know what it was for me, Parker? We had one session in 2020 at St. Petersburg. Right at mm-hmm. the Indy Lights, and David was the top driver. He was the quickest guy, and I had that interview with him on IndyCar Radio, and it was a fun interview because he was so happy, and he just said, he goes, I feel so comfortable with this race team. It's unbelievable. And then you put him with that team for another year, all the testing they've done. The kid looks like he is so relaxed, Jeremy, so just chill and happy and loving that team. And I'm telling you, when you have that kind of chemistry in an operation, Parker, you know it, man. You can make things happen.
Well, and not only that, but if you look at really the only team to challenge Andretti Autosport, the juggernaut that is Andretti and Indy Lights, was Juncos Racing in, I believe it was 2019 mm-hmm. with Rinus VK. Well, that engineer, Yancy Diotelevi, hopefully I got that right.
Diotelevi
is now with David Malukas. He was
another Canadian, by the way.
Yes, I was going to get to that. That's awesome, Rob. But, you know, Yancy and David have a really unique relationship. I got to interview actually both of them for one of the segments we did with the Road to Indy TV. And you could just tell that they were on the same page. It's really important as a driver that you get your engineer's humor and you get your engineer's quirks. And for those of anybody that knows David, I think he's funny, but he is a quirky kid. Mm-hmm. And so is Yancy. And those two, I think they jive well together. And not only can Yancy set up a car, but David can drive one. So I really think he's going to deserve some spotlight as we get into the season.
He's going to win races.
Yeah, I think so too, because here's the thing. David Malukas spent a lot of time behind Linus Lundqvist in FR Americas, and he's the only other driver to win races when Linus had problems or go toe-to-toe with him. So I think that's going to be a good story. Another interesting story is the Juncos team with Toby Sowery coming back, Stingray Robb moving up from Indy Pro 2000. And you mentioned that there was an engineering change, Parker, at Juncos. So where does that leave the engineering right now?
So that leaves the engineering, and it's a real interesting dynamic. I've actually got some real Road to Indy insider information with this one.
All right.
So Tim Neff and mm-hmm. Ricardo are actually the two engineers at Juncos Racing, which is very interesting. You've got a team engineer, a team owner engineer, and you've got Tim Neff, who's won, I believe, 7 Indy Lights championships back in the Schmidt heyday. So he knows how to tune a car. But what's interesting is for Stingray and for Toby, it's not one engineer per car. It is actually a combined effort. Both engineers are not with one car. Both engineers are with both cars, which I found very interesting. I've never seen that on the Road to Indy. I've never experienced that. Rob, maybe you can take it from there.
No, I don't know that I've ever heard like a cohesive effort like that. I'm sure the Andretti Autosport team, everybody works together, but I've never, you know, it's always one engineer on one car, right? For sure.
And from what I understand, they're going to switch the radio roles race to race.
Wow.
It's going to be, yes, it's very team first, shall we say.
Well, Parker, you said it about Tim Neff. This guy's got such a pedigree, not mm-hmm. only in Indy Lights, but in IndyCar as well. He's also a racer himself that people don't really know about. He's a champion jet ski racer as well. And the other little wrinkle, which is kind of weird to a certain extent, Tim Neff is the guy that bought all the Bilardi equipment. Yep. He's going to have his team TJ Speed as a two-car team in Indy Lights next year. So he's engineering with Ricardo, and then next year he's going to be competition with his own team as well. So this is there's so many storylines right now in this particular program.
And there's also a third storyline that may prop its head. That's for outside the recording. We'll talk more about that later on. Yes. I have some inside info. What's interesting, too, you talk about the Tim Navarcarto Junco's headset deal. There's going to be at least one conflict right now, and that's going to be the road course at Indianapolis and Road America with FR Americas, which, as we know, Kiffin Simpson won NTJ Speed Equipment at Road America, so they're going with the points lead there in FRA. So Ricardo's going to be busy with two Indy Lights cars at IMS, but I've got to say, that's an interesting dynamic. It's also interesting to see that the Andretti Autosport cars, a little bit slower with McGinnis and Kirkwood, especially trying to keep up with the Global Racing Group HMD drivers, Rob.
Well, let's talk about the fact that Kirkwood knotted the car up pretty good on Tuesday morning. He got off in turn three over the grass, over the gravel trap, right into the wall, and some pretty big hard impact on the left side of that car. Definitely not what he wanted for sure, but hey, you know, Kyle Kirkwood's a pretty savvy kid. I think he'll look at the speed he got. I feel comfortable. He's still gonna go to Barber with all the confidence he needs, Parker.
Well, this is an interesting dynamic. I've raced against Kyle my entire career, and Kyle is a personal friend. I know that's probably a conflict of interest now that I'm on the other side of the camera, but he is a good guy. But the one thing I can say from my experience of racing sports cars and racing open wheel is they don't necessarily match up. And when you have a lot of experience in one, which if we look at Kyle's off season, he got the contract with Lexus to do Petit Le Mans last year. Now, one thing you should understand too, I race sprint weekends with Porsche Carrera Cup. I get a maximum, maybe 2 hours of actually behind the wheel track time between my practice, my qualifying, and my two sprint races. Kyle triple stints almost every time he's in an endurance race, which means he's in the car for 3 hours. Now, I'll give you some insight to the former Porsche 991 that I drove in Cup Challenge 2 years ago didn't have ABS. This new car has 12 different ABS settings in a 992. And I can tell you, Rob, I have never experienced anything like it. I'm breaking this 3,000-pound sports car deeper into the hairpin at Sebring than I am an Indy Pro car. It is ridiculous, the ABS capabilities. Now, here's the other thing, is your foot just gets numb when you drive an ABS car. Because yes, it has 12 settings. Yeah. I know those 12 settings by my heart, so I know what they do as the tire degradation comes and goes. I go into the corner as fast as I can, and I hit my brake as hard as I can, and there's no art form to it whatsoever. It's like back coloring in between the lines. You just gotta do it.
Yeah.
So, you know, looking at an Indy Lights car, one of the most important parts to that car to get lap time is how it brakes and how a driver gets the rotation done in the first phase of the
corner.
All
the braking off the brake, right?
And, you know, it's going to take him. Now, he's going to have a handful because he's still got a lot more endurance races to go. And it conflicts quite a bit with the season, not it's schedule wise, but just he's got to be, you know, back to back weekends.
Interesting. Wow. That's really interesting.
Yeah. He's going to have a big job cut out for him to really build a program where he gets himself situated in the cars and gets himself acclimated early in these race weekends. Because Indy Lights, it's just like Indy Pro and USF 2000. When you go racing, you don't get a lot of track time to roll off the truck and get things right.
Now, Rob, the big story going into testing was Antonio Saravalli saying that he's going to be with a new team. Where did this – I think this one came out of left field, but talk to us more about what happened with Antonio coming with the new team.
Well, it was kind of out of left field for you guys. It's been something we've been working on for the last 2-3 months. But the concept was that his father, Peter Saravalli, and Passera Racing wanted to do their own program, do it themselves. That car is actually leased from Charles Finelli. It's the Fat Boy car that Charles was testing last year. That was a Dallara IL-15. Peter tried to talk to a couple of team owners potentially of getting that car and running that car with a couple of team owners. Elected to do it himself. So Jim Locke, who was actually one of the mechanics, he's been around a long time. For Fat Boy Racing last year was a mechanic. He's kind of prepped the car, got the car done. They put together a trackside team. They've got an engineering program they put together. To be honest, for me, one of the highlights of the week of the test day on Tuesday was how well Antonio actually did. Personally, I think he sure did a full season of Indy Pro 2000. I would love to see him in a full season. They want to get him to Indy Lights and get him there. Hopefully now that they are going to own their own program, they bought the truck and trailer, that he'll be with us for a couple of years to work on his career, on his driver development. But the bottom line is, I thought he did extremely well. Yeah. He was quicker than a bunch of guys that are with big teams. So I got to think they left the test pretty happy with a big positive.
Yeah, it's I think we're going to see him at the front. Really, any of these 13 drivers we saw at the test, I think we're in for a very competitive season of Indy
Lights. I don't think we're going to see him at the front. I'm going to be honest with you right now. Right. I don't think Antonio's not going to be at the front with a team like this. He's a rookie driver. The bottom line is, I'm just being real. He's not going to be at the front of the pack. He's going to be, if he gets some top fives or is able to get on a podium, I think it would be a huge thing for him. He's a rookie driver with a brand new racing team with not even a lot of road Indy experience. Okay. So personally, I think for him to be able to rock at a bunch of top tens and get to the top five, that's got to be a realistic goal for him.
Well, Parker, thanks for joining us. I can't wait to have you on and kind of break your chops a little bit on analysis roles, because you got some big shoes to fill when Howden's not in.
Oh, I know I got some big shoes to fill. And to be honest, let's just cut to the chase. I probably never will fill them, but luckily I'm trying to put bread on the table for my future family driving race cars and not in the media.
Well, listen, Parker does a fantastic job. I got a lot of insider information. Parker knows these drivers personally more than I do. Like you said, he ends up hanging out with them, being a pit fit. I was the insider. I'm sure he's got a lot more insider information. Plus, one thing Parker's going to be able to bring you, Jeremy, every time you have him on, is he's going to be able to talk about the driving dynamics, right? He has that all that information, all that knowledge that I don't have. So I'm really looking forward to it as well. When Parker got lined up to be the Road Indy TV host this year, the conversation we had, I was actually here. I was at the RV resort. I was out there just about 15 feet when I was talking to him about it to see if he was interested in the position. I said, if we can get you in the booth for some PA stuff as well.
Oh yeah.
He's going to be that analyst that's going to help me out. It's going to be, and Parker and I've known each other for God, 10 something years. So I'm really excited to have him in the booth as well.
Yeah. That's gonna be fun.
The excitement is all mine, Rob. And Jeremy, thank you very much for having us on.
Sounds good, and we'll see you guys in just a little while. Coming up next on Inside Open Wheel, we preview the 6th Annual Indy 500 presented by Catalyst 317.
This is Inside Open Wheel. Now, here's Jeremy Scott.
Well, it's the last race before the spring-summer Indy 500 IndyCar season opener break for the Coca-Cola Bottling Company Kokomo Indy Elite Series. And it's the 6th annual Indy 500 presented by Catalyst 317. And Charlie, I think this is your first race you're missing.
Yes, it is. Obviously, it's of course, it only makes sense to miss the biggest race of the season.
Well, you know, you don't want to pressure. You know, I know why you're missing it. It's because of pressure. No, you've got some prior commitments. Understandable. You know, you're not getting paid to do iRacing, and you know, stuff happens.
Unfortunately, real life takes precedence over video games.
Yes, I don't disagree with that one. But nonetheless, a pretty stacked field. I need to click the right tab. Qualifying was held. When was it? It was held last week, right?
It's held over the course of a week.
Okay.
Let me pull up the notice.
Yes, you have the notice. I have the qualifying results.
Let's see, members' messages.
By the way, we're recording this on Friday afternoon, so that's why we don't have the poll sitter, Phil Krause.
Qualifying procedures for the 6th annual Indianapolis 500 presented by Catalyst 317. Qualifying will be held April 3rd to April 7th, so it is over. The race will be on Sunday, April 11th at 7 p.m. Eastern Time on SimTV. Track conditions, etc. Sessions will go live at 5 p.m. Eastern Time on each day with 1 hour of practice, then 5 hours of lone qualifying. This was done in order to make it a single car qualifying to ensure that everyone has a clean track during the qualifying session uninterrupted by anyone else that is in the session with the individual. Drivers will get up to 3 attempts to qualify for the Indy 500. You may only attempt one per day. If you make a second or third attempt at any point during the week, you are withdrawing your previous attempt.
Okay. I think that's fair. You know, that's exactly how they do it, you know, in Indy, how they've done it for years. Mm-hmm. So, yeah, no, I mean, that's pretty fair. And obviously...
The idea behind it is to, as closely as possible, replicate the actual procedures of the 500.
And, of course, 33 cars qualify. for the race. We had 40 qualifiers, and I'll start with the drivers who didn't qualify. Alexander Ball, then you had 39th, then Lester Hrucek. Sorry, I know I butchered that. Aaron Rolfs, Carlos Gomez, Josh Klaug, and Marshall Stanley. Those six cars, they packed up and went home afterwards. So, your front row looks like this. Philip Kraus, Tanner Watkins, Wilson Nieto. Then row two, I know I shouldn't be too surprised, but there's a surprise in row two. Andreas Eich, Andrew Wood, and Jason Brophy. Charlie, where am I surprised in row two?
Andrew Wood.
Ding, 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 ding. No, I'm happy for Andrew. I'm really happy.
It's all those guys are team talent locked out the second row. Good for us.
No, that's great. That's great to see. All right, so row two was that. Row three, Chris Demare, Andrew Kinsella, and Adam Blocker. That is a strong row right there, too.
Mm-hmm.
It'll be interesting to see what happens with them. Henry Bennett, Brian Carey, and Daniel Zegers, your third... Wait, hold on a second. I got to do my math. One, two, three. Fourth row. Then it's Ray Kingsbury, Chris Stoffer, Matt Pauleski with row five. Row six, A.J. Burton, Adam Crane, Matt Kingsbury. Row seven, Trevor Greenfield, Joe Branch, and Chris Cahoe. Row eight, Adam Dock, Tony Schoen, Riley Thompson. Row nine, Dakota DeCenzo, David Adams, and Robert Maleska. Row 10, Matt Hollibaugh, Mike Kitchell, and Dan Ench. And rounding out your field, John Dowling, Evan Adams, and A.J. Musselman. Pretty solid field. The gap between the fastest and the slowest, if I do this in my head quickly, about 1.5 miles an hour. So pretty tight qualifying field for this year's race.
Yeah, I mean, that's sort of an artifact of iRacing, since all the conditions are completely identical, that you're going to have really tight times.
So it'll be interesting to see what happens. It's 200 laps or 500 miles at the 2.5 mile Indianapolis Motor Speedway circuit. It's going to be the last race until June. So we'll definitely have the winner on, but we've been talking with Joe Branch over the past couple of weeks, Charlie and I, and there's going to be some exciting things at the end of this season and into next season. This is going to be a series you're really going to want to watch. From what discussions we had, the future is bright for the series. I'll say that much. So if you get a chance to watch it, it's going to be Sunday at 7 Eastern on SimTV, 200 laps, 500 miles. What do you think is going to happen, since you're probably going to watch it like I am?
Believe I will, yes.
Yeah, well, if not, we can always catch it on YouTube, because, you know, they archive that stuff.
Mm-hmm.
So, I don't expect it to be a wreck fest like we've seen the past couple of ovals. I'm going on a limb, The winner's going to come out of row three. But here's why.
Okay.
Kinsella and Blocker, they've been fast all season long. Demerit has a lot to prove this season after having a couple of bumps in the road. But I also would not be surprised to see Andreas Eich win his first race of the year, and why not a big one?
Could be. I mean, like I said, I don't like making predictions. I'd rather just sort of enjoy watching it play out.
Well, here's what the point standings look like. Andreas Eich is leading Adam Blocker by 2 points. And here's the interesting thing, too. Eich has run all 8 races. Blocker only has run 6 of those 8 races. Phil Kraus, 3rd. Andrew Kinsella, 4th. Ray Kingsbury, 5th. Chris Demare finally working his way up after missing a race. He's in 6th. And remember, he still leads with 3 races won so far this year. Henry Bennett, Brian Carey, Matt Pauleski, and Joe Branch round out your top 10. No, you're not in the top 20. You're 23rd. So, I mean, worse things can happen.
Well, I just need to find a road course and not crash on it.
Well, guess what? After Indy is the Elkhart Grand Prix at Road America June 15th. Maybe we should sponsor that one again.
I do believe that I will be able to make that one. And unfortunately, I don't think I'm going to make Long Beach because I'll be out of town for that.
Oh, yeah, that's right. You will be out of town.
So I made a big stink about Long Beach and how happy I was to have it on the schedule, and I'm not going to be able to make it.
Oh, is that a race weekend? Is that an FRP race week? Yes, it is.
No, is it?
I think.
Oh, well, that's not the reason that I'm not going to be there.
I think it is. Let me look. Yes, it is.
After being locked in my apartment for the last year and a half, I'm going to spend a month and a half in Italy.
And say your girlfriend won't spend more time with you locked in somewhere?
Apparently, yeah. I guess she likes me or something.
She has more patience than Emily would. I'll tell you that. But yeah, that is actually an FRP weekend. They're going to be a pit race that weekend as I pull up my handy dandy calendar.
I see that, yeah.
I think a lot of racers are going to be missing because that's also Road America weekend.
Wait a minute. Wait, we're talking about Long Beach.
Yeah, Long Beach is June 20th.
July 20th.
Oh, July 20th. Whoops. Wait, July 20th? No.
Yeah.
No. Why does that say July 20th? July 20th isn't on a weekend. It's the middle of the week.
No, there's a couple races on Tuesdays.
Oh.
Road America is on a Tuesday also.
Okay. You know, I've been having problems with my dates lately, so pardon me. That's just not a good episode for me screwing up, so it's all good. Okay, so July 20th is on a Tuesday. That's going to be interesting.
But the upshot of that, of me being in Italy that month, is that Italian Formula 3 and Formula 4 are going to be at Imola, that actually the weekend after the Elite Series goes to Long Beach. So I'm planning on going there if they're going to be allowing spectators.
Okay.
So that'll be exciting. I've never been to Imola.
I have to get out there myself. But yeah, you can just give us a report. I don't think we have anybody racing over there. But nonetheless, you should also, I still say, you should probably do FR Europe at Monaco.
That's on my bucket list for sure. I mean, to race something there at some point.
Yeah, I may have to. Yeah, I may have to skip it.
I mean, it's
good.
You know, even in that series, to race at Monaco is going to be like $15,000-$20,000 at least. So it's a serious investment.
But no, it is.
Someday when I actually have a real career, not as a driver, obviously, but doing something, and I have some form of income, hopefully I'll be able to afford it.
What the hell's a real career? Because I need to figure that one out, too.
I don't know. I'm trying to figure it out myself.
All right, so if somebody knows a real career, just please let us know. All right, coming up next week on the program, we will preview the upcoming NTT IndyCar Series season. And also, we'll have the winner of the 6th annual Indy 500 presented by Catalyst 317. If it's going to be nice where you're at, definitely go out and enjoy the weekend. It's going to be a little wet here in the Midwest, but nonetheless, we thank you for listening. So for Rob Howden, Parker Thompson, and our driver analyst, Charlie Ante, I'm Jeremy Scott. We thank you for listening to Inside Open Wheel. We'll see you next week. Follow us on Facebook and Twitter for the latest news throughout the United States Open Wheel Ladder System. Also, don't forget about the next Coca-Cola Bottling Company, Kokomo Indy Elite Series round. It's the 6th annual Indy 500 presented by Catalyst 317 on sim.tv Sunday at 7 p.m. Eastern on YouTube. Inside Open Wheel is a production of Trackout Multimedia.